Hey folks, it's John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Car, a podcast about all things teaching related and education inspired that I literally record right here in my vehicle on my drive back from work as a high school instructional coach. This week, we're talking all about the power of seeing our own ears, which is kind of impossible without a mirror. And so what are the mirrors in our schools or classrooms? Today specifically, I'm going to take a deeper dive in a technique called instructional rounds. And if you've never done it before, this will give you a 15-minute primer on how to get into it. We'll get into the nitty-gritty and provide some resources during the podcast. And if you like what you're hearing, feel free to message me. Certainly, we can keep the conversation going all week long. So some housekeeping notes. I'm on Twitter at MeehanEDU. That's my last name, and then EDU, like the teaching thing, because I love the teaching thing. I have a website. It's www.adrenalinerush.com, which is all about game-changing student engagement, inspired by theme parks, mud runs, and escape rooms. And Adrenaline Rush is also the name of my book. I have a bunch of templates online, and I'm happy to connect and share anything I can for you. Because as an instructional coach, you do a lot of work across all content areas. Though I have an English background, and I started as an English teacher, I still have two sections of American literature that I teach now. I'm always working with teachers in all content areas in my small Catholic school, which is about 1,000 plus students and about 100 or so teachers in Arlington, Virginia. And what I say, even though we are a Catholic school, is that great teaching is content agnostic. So whether you're a great English teacher or a great science or a math or a history teacher, we can study the art and the science behind what's making your teaching awesome. And in theory, we could replicate that by honing those same skills. And I love that approach. It's out of Doug Lemov's book, Teach Like a Champion. He says, don't focus on your skills, focus on technique. If you focus on technique, the skill comes as a byproduct of that, right? So if you're like a batter in a batting cage, practice the swing, choke up on the bat, move that back elbow up, and so on and so forth, keeping your eye on the ball. Those are the skills necessary. But really what you're doing is the skills are being mastered by focusing on the technique of how you hold, how you lift, how you focus. And then by focusing on the technique, we can get better at the skill. Now, that said, talking all about instructional rounds. If you've never done them before, many schools have some sort of peer-to-peer observation system in place. You might have heard them called instructional rounds or learning walks or pineapple charts or just, you know, peer observations. The difference between a peer observation, which I want to make clear here in the beginning, and an admin observation, and it's right there in the name, is that peer observations are, or should be, strictly observational and non-evaluative. If you're working with an administrator, typically, and not always, but typically, administrators are bosses, and they're in charge of making sure that the ships are sailing the way they're supposed to and that the trains are running on time. So when they come into your classroom, they typically have an agenda, so to speak, and that could be a lowercase a or a capital A. If you've ever been in an admin team that doesn't really agree with you, you feel that that agenda sometimes is a definite capital A, right? But when they come into your classroom in an admin-style observation, it's usually an evaluation. In my first school, I think we were observed maybe two or three times a year from each admin. And so, you know, we were divided into admin teams, and then our classrooms, one or two or three times a year, they tell us in advance, this is your formal observation. We're going to come in, and we like a copy of your lesson plans in a folder by the door, or, you know, later email, whatever it was. And you could expect on them, you kind of knew when they were coming, the formal, they'd be there for the full lesson plan. They'd probably take a running record or some notes, fill out a chart. And then afterwards, you'd either hear from them or wouldn't hear from them. But you're really there to kind of see that you knew what you were doing. That's from the top down. A peer observation, however, is not like that. They can be scheduled or they can be unscheduled. Today I'm going to talk about the scheduled version of, but they're usually strictly for observation purposes, not for evaluation, because they're conducted by people who are teachers, just like us. Right down the road from us or right down the hall from us, there's a whole bunch of people who are doing exactly what we're doing with pretty much the same group of kids, just one period earlier or later. So if you're in like a middle school, for example, maybe the math teachers would all look at one another's classes. Or if you're in a high school, maybe all of the teachers who had a third period prep would all look at classes available during that window. Or if you're in elementary school, maybe the second grade teachers would watch the first grade teachers, the kindergarten teachers, and so on and so forth. So the beauty of these peer observations is they have a chance for us to really start a dialogue about what we're seeing in a typical day in the life of our school. So when I talk about the scheduled versions of observations, I'm really talking about what we call instructional rounds, which is modeled off of the medical rounds community. In the medical community, when you walk into like a teaching hospital, right, there's the operating theater, and there are a whole bunch of doctors who are getting better at being doctors, watching other doctors practicing the techniques necessary to save persons' lives. Or they're taking part in rounds as a diagnostics team. And you might see like one head doctor with like three or four, you know, working in the residency, and they're bouncing between rooms, consulting with patients or consulting with doctors as doctors are consulting with patients. And then as a team, they're kind of coming away and dialoguing about what they're seeing in practice, either in the patient's rooms or in the operating for surgery. That's helpful. It's really helpful because sometimes, especially with medicine, there's not just one right answer. There are a lot of things that we know can work, certain allergies or certain, you know, pre-existing conditions that would make certain procedures risky or maybe impossible. But there are many ways to go about treatment that really could move through a whole bunch of different skills at the same time. And so by watching others who are expert in that field, medical professionals can get better on making informed opinions that, yeah, you know, on one hand, I got a bucket of gasoline, and the other hand, I got a bucket of water. The trick is to figure out which one to use and when. I can make this thing flare up, or I can make this thing go away. Sometimes you need to do a little bit of one or the other, and really, it's only through the practice of seeing of it that we can kind of learn how to do that better, if that makes any sense. So, about maybe 10, 15 years ago, Harvard University Press published a book called Instructional Rounds in Education, and it talks very plainly and very detailedly about adapting that same model for a school-based instructional rounds. They actually have a follow-up book called School-Based Instructional Rounds. But it's exactly what it sounds like. On a school level, and I'll talk about my school as the sample, we take a single day of instruction and ask the question, what does instruction look like at school X? For pillar to post, 9 a.m. till 5 p.m., or in this case, most schools are like 7:30 to 3:30. What does it look like in a day in the life of this school? We all know the observations are coming, which does skew it a little bit. We'll talk about that in a second. But we just let teachers do what they do best, teach. And then we send other teachers through just to kind of watch. Maybe there's a tracking sheet that they carry with them or a graphic organizer. Maybe they have a look for question or like a focused for question or a technique that they're looking for. Or maybe it's just wide open that they're just sort of bullet pointing, taking running records as they see stuff. The key to a good instructional rounds practice is that whatever data is collected is really designed to be for the good of the school, not for the individual teacher that's being observed. And that's different than the admin thing. If you're being observed by your admin, they're seeing you so that you know you still have a job there. They're either telling you you're doing great, or hey, you get a raise, or they're telling you, hey, I'm not liking what I'm seeing, we have to step this up, we have to change this out, whatever that looks like. And if they're not giving you feedback, that's a whole different conversation. But if it's one-on-one, they're seeing you and you have the right to that feedback because they came into your classroom, so you have the right to say, hey, what'd you think? Instructional rounds are a little different. The peer-to-peer thing, we're not sending any one teacher into any one classroom. Rather, we're sending two or three teachers into the room of a colleague at a time with the idea that those two or three people might see totally different things even though they're seeing the exact same lesson. And believe it or not, that's actually a good thing. What it does is it forces us to begin some dialogue about where we start our conversation. If you came into my classroom and all you noticed that the walls are white, the ceiling was cracking, and the tiles on the floor looked a little ripped up, if that's all you noticed, someone else came to my classroom and said, wow, those kids were fully engaged. I love the activity. I love the energy. I love the look of wonder and you know, just joy in those students' eyes. We are in two very different places, and both of those are equally valid responses. So when we do our instructional rounds, what we try to train teachers to do, and it's out of the book, and it really does help, is to observe classes without judgment. And that means making their comments strictly observational and non-evaluative. I'll give examples. So when you're taking notes in my class, you can say, ceiling was cracked, tiles were dirty, you know, room was cold, walls were white. There's no judgment in any of that stuff. I think dirty is an objective thing. It either is clean or isn't clean. My mom would probably have a different definition of clean and dirty than I would because she's really, really tidy and I'm maybe a little less so. But generally speaking, we can agree cracked equals cracked, white equals white. You could not say, I loved XYZ. I was really impressed by ABC. My favorite part was thing one, two, and three. Because here's the thing, different people have different preferences. And if you're talking about things that are your favorites, things that you liked, not only are you sort of forcing yourself to reach for things that we have to say something nice, the compliment sandwich all the time, because no one wants to offend anybody, but rather we're skewing our data because different people have different preferences. You may have liked it when you came into my classroom and my kids were bouncing off the walls and laughing and having a good time. A teacher with a different mindset would walk in and say, that isn't what real teaching looks like to me. I don't really appreciate it. And so to force ourselves to just write down strict observation of what we are hearing or seeing. And that's hard. Like, it's really, really hard. If you come into my classroom and students are bouncing off the walls, or if students are playing on their phones, you could write that students are distracted, students are out not having a good time, or students look bored, or students' heads are down. If you're doing it without judgment, you might have to say something like, teacher asks students to raise hands. 7 students raise hands. 4 students, eyes on cell phones, right? Or maybe 4 students, eyes on cell phones, and then you look closer, students accessing digital version of textbook. Or you look closer and 4 students on cell phones, 2 accessing digital version of textbook, 1 texting friend, 1 playing Netflix. That's observational data that we can actually use and move with. So the idea is we gather all this data in teams. 2 or 3 people come into a teacher's room. They come in for about 15, 20 minutes, and they watch the class in its 15 to 20 minutes, and they know when they're coming in, so there is a little bit of a bias there. But then they collect their data, and then they dip out, they go to a second class, and then they go to a third class. The way that works in my school is during our prep periods, on our block teaching day, every teacher in the building is scheduled to observe 3 colleagues, and every teacher observes in a team of 3 colleagues, which means that everyone is seen exactly once for only about 15 to 20 minutes. And we have like these slices of life of what it pieces together to become a full day of instruction in our school. We then take all of that data, we do a massive debrief the following day or that afternoon, and we just talk about, okay, so in a day in the life of our school, what trends are we noticing? And there's all sorts of ways you can debrief that data. You can use sticky notes, you can use a question formulation technique, you can use the MicroLab protocol, you can have a guiding question, you can use Google Forms or Google Documents, you can share this stuff electronically so teachers are just pouring through lots and lots of data. You can do word clouds to see what words are coming up most frequently in classes that feel the most, you know, engaged. But the beauty of it is the data is totally scrubbed of any identifying information. So you don't know if that was Mr. Johnson's class or Ms. Jones's class. I mean, sometimes if it's like there are dodgeballs flying in the air, you can intuit it is a PE class. But as a school, the whole faculty is being trained up on just how to look at data and how to aggregate good information and how to dismiss information that might seem positive but in fact not be useful in its data analysis, which then informs questions. Hey, we're noticing that a lot of these classes have students in rows. Is that something that we want? And then having those dialogue opportunities through the school. Or we're noticing that the students who seem to be the most authentically engaged based on the level of participation in classrooms seem to be in small group activities. Is that something that we want? And there's no right or wrong answer to any of this stuff. It's really just a plus delta. Here's the positive trends that we're noticing. Here's the trends that we feel need further question. And that helps us as a school make sense of what we're doing as teachers and what we share in common and what we want to do next. Now, to build an instruction around framework can be a bit of a logistics nightmare. I've actually been working with my team for about 3 weeks to get it together. We have 100 teachers. We got to make sure that every teacher observes there are 4 teaching periods in the day. So period 1, 3, 5, and 7 on this odd block day. The following day is periods 2, 4, 6, and then we have like the free period. So during periods 1, 3, 5, or 7, every teacher will be observed by a team of 3. But we want to make sure that no teacher is observed by someone in his or her own department. And when people are observing, they're never observing with other people from their department. So it's not like the 3 history teachers get together and watch a math class. So instead we have like a history, an English, and a science teacher observing a math, a Spanish, and a PE class, if that makes sense. What that does is it really starts the conversation about just the practice of teaching. Because if 3 Spanish teachers get together and go into another Spanish classroom, they immediately will start talking about the content and the way that that language or that lesson was taught. And then they're going to start talking about their own classes. Like, hey, I wouldn't have done it this way. When I do it, I blah, 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 blah. What this forces us to do is we have a common experience. We all saw the same class. Let's see if we saw the same things, and really forcing ourselves to talk about it objectively without, oh, I love this, or I love that, or I love that, or I hated this. It's just, no, no, no. I'm noticing X, Y, and Z. I'm wondering how they A, B, and C. And I really think for next steps, we have the possibility to adapt or change or modify in our own classes. 1, 2, and 3. And again, if you choose to follow up with a person who you observed, you can, but the activity is really not designed for that. It's designed for the teachers to have that dialogue, to get a clearer sense of their own community and to say, hey, if these are the things that we value, if these are the things that we like, the things we want to work for, what does it look like in a day in the life of instruction through our school? Again, it takes a lot of planning, but it is absolutely some of the best PD you can ever get. It's just watching other teachers do what they do best, looking in the mirror and saying, hey, can I do better? Because these teachers are mirrors of us right down that hallway. That's it for this week. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Thanks so much for tuning in this week to the podcast, and message me on Twitter @MeehanEDU or head to the website, Adrenaline Rush. I'll see you next week.